This is KGNU's Morning Magazine for Thursday, June 10th. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. Coming up on today's program, bills that amount to the largest tax reform effort in a decade have been sent to the governor's desk. We'll take a look at the details. We'll hear the director of a documentary currently in production looking at the impact of COVID-19 on Colorado small businesses. And a commentary about the psychological benefits of gardening. At the bottom of the hour, we'll have the BBC News headlines. Then it's a public affair. We'll hear a compilation of stories produced by members of the Rocky Mountain Community Radio Network. Then at 9:30, a mix of eclectic music with the Morning Sound Alternative. All that's still coming up, so stay tuned to your community radio station. First, we'll start with the headlines. In COVID news, Governor Jared Polis announced Wednesday that at least 70% of eligible residents in 12 Colorado counties have received at least one dose of the coronavirus vaccine. Counties with 70% vaccination include metro counties like Denver, Boulder, and Broomfield, and more rural counties such as San Juan, San Miguel, Summit, Pitkin, and Gunnison. The Biden administration had set a vaccination rate goal of 70% of the eligible population by July 4th. While counties like Boulder, Denver, and Broomfield are well ahead of that goal, the national average is unlikely to meet the mark by Independence Day. Data shows that vaccine uptake is lagging in heavily Republican areas. And speaking of milestones, Colorado Parks and Wildlife announced Wednesday it had spotted at least three gray wolf pups and two other collared wolves. Staff said it had conducted three separate observations of the den site from a safe distance, approximately 2 miles away, between June 4th and June 8th. A Colorado biologist said the state is continuing to actively monitor the den site while exercising extreme caution so as not to inadvertently jeopardize the potential survival of these pups. All three wolf pup spottings were made at dawn or dusk in low-light conditions, and biologists and area staff said they are hoping to have additional opportunities to observe the pups as they grow larger and spend more time outside of the den. The discovery comes after Colorado voters narrowly approved a ballot measure last year that requires the state to reintroduce the animal on public lands in the western part of the state by the end of 2023. Colorado environmentalists are celebrating after the developer of the Keystone XL pipeline announced Wednesday it is pulling the plug on the controversial project after the Biden administration revoked its permit in January. TC Energy, the Canadian company behind the project, said it decided to terminate the project after a comprehensive review of its options. The cancellation ends more than a decade of controversy over the pipeline. Environmentalists have argued the project threatened the environment and would only worsen the climate crisis. The project aimed to carry oil from the tar sands of Canada into the United States, and it has been a political football for years. The Greeley meatpacking plant has been ordered to pay millions in a discrimination lawsuit that alleged the company targeted people who were Black, Muslim, and Somali. KGNU's Steve Miller says the workplace discrimination lawsuit goes back to 2010.
The food processing company JBS, located in Greeley, will pay about 300 employees up to $5.5 million for past employee discrimination. The EEOC, the U.S. Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, filed a lawsuit against the food processing company in 2010. The EEOC claimed that JBS discriminated against Black people, Muslims, and immigrants from Somalia. The alleged discrimination violates Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, the federal law forbidding discrimination in the workplace. According to the EEOC allegations, Muslim employees were not allowed to pray and were harassed when they attempted to pray during their designated break time. During the 2008 Ramadan, the Muslim month of fasting, prayer, and reflection, the company prohibited employees from drinking water and washing before their prayers by turning off water fountains. The EEOC also claimed that company managers and other employees threw meat or bones at Black and Somali employees, as well as calling them offensive names because of their race, national origin, and religion. In addition to the monetary settlement, JBS will now make changes to its anti-discrimination policies, hold yearly training on anti-discrimination laws, and give former employees the opportunity to be rehired. I'm Steve Miller for KGNU.
The city of Boulder is inviting community members to share thoughts on how policing should work moving forward. A press release from the city says the Boulder Police Department is working to make significant changes in the midst of local and national discussions around the need for reform in policing. Part of that work includes updating the department's master plan. The first meeting on the topic is today, June 10th, from 9 to 10:30 a.m. Go to beheardboulder.org/reimagine-policing for more information. Weather today along the Front Range, 93 is the expected high temperature and 58 for a low tonight. Cooler at 81 degrees tomorrow and back up to 88 on Saturday. Outside our Boulder studios, it's 60 degrees. You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. The Colorado legislature passed measures this session amounting to the state's most significant tax reform in a decade. Joining me to discuss the details is Elliot Goldbaum of the Colorado Fiscal Institute. First, walk us through what measures were passed and what they would do.
Well, there were a few bills related to taxes that passed, and I want to focus on a couple of them. The big ones that passed were House Bill 1311 and House Bill 1312, which were collectively the Tax Fairness for Coloradans package. And what we saw with that was legislation that recognized that workers and families are what really powers Colorado's economy and that they should have a fairer tax code. In that legislation, lawmakers more than doubled the state earned income tax credit, which boosts incomes for low-wage workers. They also funded, finally, the state child tax credit, which has been on the books for about 7 or 8 years now, but has never been funded by the legislature. Both of those credits give Coloradans a percentage of dollars that is related to federal tax credits that have similar names. Both of those tax credits have been associated with a laundry list of positive benefits for recipients like better health, kids doing better in school. Research has also shown that they benefit local economies, too. Those bills included also a dramatic increase in the amount of personal property that's exempt from taxes for small businesses, and created a new tax incentive for employee-owned businesses. So with those bills, what the legislature was really doing was saying small businesses, workers, families are really the people who we should be doing a better job of making our tax code fair for.
So the main beneficiaries would be families with children and owners of small businesses. Can you convert this into dollars and cents? Like, how much can a family with, say, two kids count on?
You know, it really is hard to say because it's a lot of it is based on people's incomes and the amount of the federal credit that this is related to. But, you know, a few $100 for families and you know, if you have kids under six and you're a low wage worker, then this is definitely going to benefit you.
Is that a few $100 annually or each month?
A few $100 a year in addition to the dollars that they're getting from the federal tax credits.
Right. And so the federal government is going to start a program that refunds in monthly increments the child tax credit?
Correct. So under the federal legislation that was passed earlier this year, there was a dramatic increase in the child tax credit, and that is going to include monthly payments potentially for families that qualify for the child tax credit. The Colorado child tax credit, the state-level child tax credit, does not operate in that way. This would just be a refund that people would get in addition to money that they're already getting on their federal and state tax returns,
And at the state level, where is the money coming from to fund this tax reform?
Good question. So the way that the lawmakers paid for it was by closing loopholes that state analyses from the Department of Revenue and the Office of the State Auditor showed weren't growing the economy, creating jobs, creating a more equitable economy, or broadly benefiting the state. And if folks are really interested, there's links to those reports that can show you all of the ways that they determined whether those tax credits and exemptions and deductions, all of those that they determined weren't working. They also were targeted at really big corporations and very high income earners. So by closing those loopholes, lawmakers were able to fund those tax credits and other tax provisions that were targeted more at working families and small businesses.
And you mentioned earlier that the child tax credit at the state level, that's been something that's been that proponents have been trying to get through for several years now. Did the pandemic kind of eventually, tip the scales on this, or to what do you attribute it finally going through?
Well, I think there's a couple of things. I think that a big reason is because, Colorado, we've not been able to fund that in the past. I think that by those state analyses coming in the last few years, and Colorado Fiscal Institute was one group that was definitely pushing for those state analyses, because we hear a lot about these various tax credits and deductions, what we call tax expenditures, spending money through the tax code. And we thought it would be really important for taxpayers and lawmakers to know whether those are working the way that lawmakers intended. And when those state analyses that have been coming in from over the last year or so started to show which ones could potentially be closed, that would be seen as something that everybody can get behind, because nobody wants to be wasting money through the tax code, just like nobody wants to be wasting money that's being spent in the budget either. So I think that those analyses really did power it. I think that there's also been, in part due maybe to the pandemic, but I think it's been a long time coming, more of an emphasis on just how unequal our tax code is and how unequal incomes are in our country. And I think that there's been more of a willingness among lawmakers to embrace tax reform that puts workers and families before big corporations and the wealthy.
And these bills haven't yet been signed into law. Is it reasonable to expect that they will be? And if it is, how soon can families and small business owners start benefiting from them?
The governor has been a strong supporter of these bills, and we are expecting that he will sign them. And in terms of when they start to take effect, they won't take effect until tax year 2022, so next year's tax year. But the long-term permanent nature of these tax laws is really important. This is not a COVID relief bill, that's where we're hoping that we can get money into the hands of people immediately. These are long-term changes that we hope will make our economy fairer for years, decades to come.
Elliot Goldbaum of the Colorado Fiscal Institute, thank you so much for speaking with me today.
Thanks so much for having me, Shannon.
While many of us were doing our best to isolate during the height of the pandemic, cinematographer and director Nick Olivas, along with his team, were doing their best to safely keep tabs on a group of small businesses in Colorado and record their stories for an upcoming documentary called Colorado Recovers. KGNU's Hannah Lee Myers spoke to Olivas about the project and what the people he is following are experiencing.
On March 25th, COVID struck Colorado. Governor Polis announced the stay-at-home orders, and thousands of Colorado small businesses had to close their doors and furlough their employees, never knowing for sure if they would reopen again.
That was a clip from the trailer for the upcoming documentary Colorado Recovers, currently in production. I'm joined now by the director and producer of that project, Nick Olivas. Nick, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, absolutely.
So tell us about some of the people in your documentary. Who are your subjects?
Yeah, so we have a husband and a wife, a Latino couple that own a barbershop. And during the pandemic, they were shut down for a little bit. And then we have a single dad who teaches foreign language, and he had to move his operation online. He lost a lot of students because a lot of his students were over the age of 50. Not all of them are familiar with the computer. Then we have Wendy Curtis of ComedyWorks. And when you're the owner of a comedy club, you make money from the drinks and the food. And then we have Q's Pub over in Colorado Springs. And when they allowed him to reopen, he was able to reopen. But during the time they're closed, he had to try to pay his staff while they weren't working. And then we have a lady named Linda, who's a real estate agent. The part that took a hit there was the commercial real estate companies were just breaking their leases and moving out of their offices because all their employees had to work from home. So a lot of companies were deciding not to rent space because they didn't need it anymore.
I'm curious if, of the stories you documented and interviewing the workers and small businesses, was there one that had a particularly profound impact on you that was truly heart-wrenching or really just hit home for you?
Yeah, when we went to go interview the person in charge of the language school, we just felt the pain when we went down to their house, his office, and this guy spent 10 years building up his business, and all his hard work is done, almost half of it is done in a matter of weeks. You just feel the pain, and for him, it's not just the money, it was allow him to have the time off he needed to be with his son.
Did any of the stories or situations you encountered surprise you or maybe play out differently than you expected?
Yeah, things did. Like, we didn't expect right now that the mask mandate would ever be lifted, at least as soon. It seems like as soon as Denver found out they're going to host the All-Star game, think restrictions started to get really, really relaxed. And that's when we didn't expect that. You know, all this time that we've listened that the virus is very serious, that you need to take these precautions. So, but then now it's like, oh, okay, this event's coming in and it's going to track a lot of money. And now all these restrictions are lifted and you're like,
And we're currently seeing a slip in small business recovery with the National Federation of Independent Businesses monthly jobs report for May showing a record high 48% of owners with unfilled job openings. Are you seeing evidence of that problem talking to your documentary subjects?
Yes. With the restaurants and entertainment business that happened, they were not able to come back because they found other jobs or they moved out of state. They just simply found other opportunities. However, they were able to get a couple of their managers back. Just the wait staff, they had to get new employees and retrain again. I mean, it's a little fortunate, but a little bit, you know, that sometimes that's part of life. You find new opportunities.
So what was it like making a documentary during a time when most people were keeping their distance and avoiding contact with others?
It is very difficult. It's difficult because we're always reacting to what the news is telling us. And one day we could be scheduling a shoot for the film to interview somebody, and they say, hey, guess what? We're going to have to reschedule because they don't want anybody, new people, to go in the building, or we have to interview them in another location than their place of business. And then we have to make another time to go into their place of business when nobody's in the building and film inside their business, you know, and then we leave, and then they have to clean everything, you know, for contamination. Half of my team I'm working with, I had never seen before in real life, and I'm just talking to them through Zoom. And then 6 months into this whole thing, when things are starting to reopen, I finally get to see them face-to-face and work with them. And it's honestly, it felt like online long-distance dating, really did. You don't get to meet them until like months later in person. You almost want to hug them, but then you realize you can't hug them because of the virus.
And that was Nick Olivas, director and producer of Colorado Recovers, a documentary about the impact of COVID-19 on small businesses in Colorado currently in production. Nick, thank you so much again for your time.
Awesome. Thank you.
For KGNU, I'm Hanley Myers.
It's gardening season, and today we hear from Priscilla Dan Courtney, a clinical psychologist and writer in Boulder, as she reads her essay called How Does Your Garden Grow?
Every spring, my husband flies east to help his mother tend her perennial garden. At age 95, she no longer is in sun hat and trousers, patting dirt and potting plants. She watches, encourages, smiles, and sometimes directs, still the master gardener of her own blossom. Her garden blooms as if to balance out the time in our lives when leaves drop away. For most of us, our digging began young. The sandbox was our peaceful play. I remember my father saying, "You digging for China, honey?" I always wondered what he meant, China or China the country. I just knew they were both far, far away. The healing benefits of sand play therapy for children have been documented for decades. As spring nudges out its predecessor, the snowy and cold pandemic, our gardens are beginning to flourish, a healing magical sandbox that has no bounds from one neighbor to the next. And even if we are without a garden, there's always one nearby to dazzle us. The positive effects of gardening on our mental health is a burgeoning line of inquiry. Studies conclude that green care, a therapeutic approach that includes exposure to both plants and gardening, reduces stress, anxiety, and depression, and aids in recovery from grief and addiction. A UK study suggests that the friendly bacteria in soil have a similar effect on the brain as antidepressants. Dirt in our fingernails is medicinal. And therapeutic gardens date back to Florence Nightingale, when hospitals used gardens as an adjunct treatment for mental health issues. The combination of physical activity and exposure to sunlight and nature is medicine for both body and mind. How frequently I hear, "I lose myself when I garden," but we actually find a deeper self within, a vertical journey into soil that touches the soul. Native American culture teaches that we are the land, a reciprocal relationship that tends to our mind and body, and in turn we must nurture and cultivate its bounty. I watch my husband through our front window, watering on warm evenings, a meditation cleansing the rigors of the day. But not only do we connect to ourselves, but our gardens connect us to others. That vertical journey becomes a horizontal collective experience, as we often tend to the blossoms of friends and neighbors. Whether it is indoor or outdoor, we ask for their care if we are away from our budding responsibilities. Thus, our gardens connect us to ourselves and others, fostering the healing power of belonging. Our gardens express the truth about life with both colorful glory and tangled weeds. In the words of James Lowell, a 19th century poet, a weed is no more than a flower in disguise. It also expresses our character. My mother had a small garden she called her secret garden, set back in our yard. It was apropos given she was a mysterious woman in many beautiful and creative ways. My father loved his flowers, but what often seemed just as important was his small red tractor he drove to mow our lawn. He was a complicated man, delightful in ways, yet having control and being in the driver's seat was paramount. My husband's kindness and care of others came out as he helped build small gardens for our neighbors who had less of a green thumb. The garden is our teacher, our messenger of sorts. When we decided to downsize when our children moved away, our garden spoke to us, letting us know it was time to manage a smaller, simpler plot in a number of ways. The message came with my husband's aching back from afternoons of garden work. It taught us that it was time to move on. And when we moved away from Boulder for a short interlude, it was a dying vegetable garden that reminded us we had no roots away from Boulder, and we soon returned. As they speak to us, we must also speak to them. Since I've been out of my psychotherapy office for over a year, my plants have been shrinking in the silence. They no longer hear our healing voices. It may be the lack of CO2 from our exhale, but I know it is more than that. All things need love and attention. Gardens hold so much wealth. Now I realize I wasn't digging for China or China. In my sandbox, it was a child's intuition that knew there was hidden gold deep below the surface. This is Priscilla Dan Courtney.
You can read other essays by Priscilla Dan Courtney in the Boulder Daily Camera. Before we go, let's take a look at what's coming up on tonight's It's the Economy.
The use, abuse, and effort to regulate cryptocurrencies such as Bitcoin is developing at dizzying speed. While the government of El Salvador yesterday became the first country to adopt Bitcoin as legal tender, the FBI was able to recover millions in Bitcoin ransom from hackers' digital wallets, and the Senate Banking Committee held hearings on the need to regulate cryptocurrency. And that was just one day's crypto news. Tune in this evening at 6 p.m. on It's the Economy for a primer on the basics of cryptocurrency. That's Crypto 101 tonight at 6 p.m. on KGNU Community Radio.
that does it for today's program. You've been listening to The Morning Magazine here on listener-sponsored community radio. I've been your host, Shannon Young. A reminder that if you'd like to share a comment with KGNU, call us at 303-447-9911. We play the messages back on Tuesday mornings at 8:25 during The Morning Magazine. Music heard during The Morning Magazine is by Poddington Bear and used under a Creative Commons Attribution License. If you have news tips for us, email us at news@kgnu.org.